Recorded Books presents The Nixon Conspiracy, Watergate and the Plot to Remove the President by Jeff Shepard, narrated by Charles Constant. To the hundreds of men and women who served honorably and well in the Nixon administration. Introduction. The East Room is the largest gathering space in the White House, but seems a lot smaller when it's packed full of people and TV cameras. It gets stuffy. It was mid-morning and the sun was shining outside, but the massive drapes had been shut. Through the few shafts of sunlight that managed to sneak in, we could see dust particles floating in the air. We were waiting for the boss. At noon exactly, some 2 hours hence, Richard M. Nixon's resignation would take effect, and we would return to the East Room to watch Vice President Gerald R. Ford be sworn in to take his place. We of Nixon's White House staff had been assembled that fateful morning to hear from the chief for the last time, before he was to board the helicopter on the South Lawn that would take him away, into exile in California. I was standing along the back. As a young lawyer on the White House domestic policy staff, I didn't merit a front-row seat like Henry Kissinger or other senior members of his administration. People were crowded in wherever they could get space, even spilling out the open doors and into the hall. There was a low murmur as people talked nervously amongst themselves. Now and then I heard a muffled sob or sniffle, or caught a flash of white as a handkerchief was drawn toward a moistened eye. There were certainly a lot of emotions running through the room. At least for me, it was all anger and disappointment. It shouldn't have come to this. I had worked on the president's defense team as we weathered the storms of criticism stemming from the 1972 Watergate break-in. I'd lost friends and spent years of my life refuting sensational media claims, fighting off unscrupulous prosecutors, reporters, and congressional staff, and working to clear the good name of Richard Nixon, a man I'd known and admired since college, and for whom I'd come to Washington and was honored to serve. With the release of the Smoking Gun tape earlier that week, all my work to defend him had come to naught. It contained, I thought, irrefutable proof of guilt. Woodward and Bernstein, those cocky Washington Post reporters, Jaworski and his team of special prosecutors, all the people I'd fought against for so long, they'd been vindicated, and I felt like a dupe. So maybe my president was a crook after all. The thoughts raced through my head. How, I thought, could he have done this to us, all of the people who'd signed on to work for his administration, all of us who believed in him through the darkest of nights? And now he had the nerve to call us together for one last grand oration? There wasn't a hint of a tear in my eye. I gritted my teeth and waited. The applause started with the people out in the hall, signaling the president's approach, which led to a standing ovation. He took the stage smiling, accompanied not only by First Lady Pat Nixon, but by his two daughters and their husbands, Mr. and Mrs. David Eisenhower and Mr. and Mrs. Edward Cox. Good heavens, I thought. He's dragged the whole family up there with him. The girls, their husbands, all close to tears. He's making them stand there as props to show someone still loves him. He thinks this is just another political show. That only upset me more. How dare he, I thought. Everyone was still on their feet, applauding. I suppose I clapped along with them. It seemed like the right thing to do. He let the standing ovation go on for 5 painful minutes, actually basking in it. I wondered if he was milking it for everything he could, perhaps fearing it would be the last standing ovation he'd ever get. He started off with a joke about how this was a spontaneous event, a lame joke when he was about to become the first American president to resign. Part of me already wanted to be somewhere else, anywhere else than in the East Room, watching this tragedy play out. He went on for the next 20 minutes, rambling at times. He wore glasses, the first time I'd ever seen him do so in public. But I could tell he was speaking from the heart. He thanked everybody, from the White House ushers and butlers to the cabinet officials. He went on about his old man and the poorest lemon ranch in California, and how his mother was a saint who lost 2 sons to tuberculosis. Tragedies, no doubt, but was this really the time to relive his family dramas, given the large-scale tragedy the nation was going through? He ended with the advice never to hate, saying that if you came to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?